What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. News Talk 1110-99.3 WBT. Kamala in town, the vice president, not aware of any comments on the border situation. I think because she fixed it, right? She went to the root causes of it and got it all taken care of. 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. So yesterday, just hours after his son was convicted on three gun charges, the president spoke in front of a gun grabby group. The Everytown USA Moms Demand Action crowd, the very crowd that promotes these kinds of gun laws that Hunter Biden was found to have violated, which obviously he violated. He talked about it in his memoir. So that's why the jury only took a couple of hours to return their guilty verdict on all three counts. So Joe Biden goes to the, what do they call this thing? The Everytown annual conference. Now I forget what it's, Gun Sense University is what they call it. Gun Sense University. You guys really need to come up with some better language around this debate, because I think you've kind of jumped the shark on this. Gun Sense University, GSU. I don't know. Everytown, USA, Moms Demand Action. Just embrace the gun grab, you know? Gun Grabbers University. Just embrace it. This is what you want to do. We know this is what you want to do. Okay, so the president goes and he makes some comments at the Gun Grabbing University's event. And, well, here, I'll let you take a listen to it. This is, well, all right, hang on. Yeah, we'll start with this. I got three audio clips. Number one, here is Joe Biden in the space of 1 minute offering up at least four lies, maybe even half a dozen.
They're so damn important. We need you. We need you to overcome the unrelenting opposition of the gun lobby, gun manufacturers, so many politicians when they oppose common sense gun legislation. I used to be a law, when I was no longer the vice president, I became a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Before that, I taught a constitutional law class, and so I taught the Second Amendment. There's never been a time that says you can own anything you want. Never. You couldn't own a cannon during the Civil War. No, I'm serious. Think about it. How many times have you heard this phrase?
The blood of liberty. Quash of dough.
Give me a break. Seriously. Woo. And by the way, if they want to think to take on government, if we get out of line, which they're talking again about, well, guess what? They need F-15s. They don't need.
Okay. So there's a lot there. So let's take them piece by piece. First, he claims he was a professor at University of Pennsylvania. He was not. They gave him a title of a practicing professor. He didn't actually teach any classes, okay? It's not like he was standing in front of a class giving out syllabuses or syllabi, right? Wasn't grading papers. He did public speaking events at the campus. That's what he did. He would do meet and greets, Q&As on a stage with other people, right? Or alone. He hawked his book at one of these events. When he says a professor, He's indicating that, like, I'm a learned scholar, and so therefore, like, I was hired on because of my expertise in law, and I'm going to now, you know, fill these young skulls of mush with all of these legal theories and case law and all this. He did not do that, okay? The guy was not a practicing lawyer, right? He's been a career politician. He's been in office for, like, 60 years or whatever it's been. So, number one. Number two, he says he taught a constitutional law class on the Second Amendment, which apparently he did not do that either. He said also you couldn't own a cannon when the Second Amendment was implemented in the Civil War, he said. You couldn't own a cannon. And that is not true. You actually can still own a cannon. People own cannons. Hello, Higgins from Magnum PI? Come on, people. People owned cannons. And he also messed up on that quote about the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots. And he called it the tree of blood, I think is what he called it. Let's re-rack it. Let's listen again. Okay, so, he said there, by the way, that rundown came from Greg Price, comms guy for the State Freedom Caucus. Gun Owners of America has also responded to this soundbite. They said this notion that Americans would need F-15s to resist tyrannical government. You actually don't need F-15s in order to resist a tyrannical government. Look at Afghanistan. Look at Hamas, right? Come on, guys. Isn't this your poster child for resistance? He claimed the firearm industry is the only industry with immunity. They are not. He claimed that guns kill more children than car accidents and cancer combined. They do not. And he got the name of the federal agency responsible for gun control wrong. He called it the AFT. He's fine, everybody. He's fine. All right, let me play this soundbite again.
They're so damn important. We need you. We need you to overcome the unrelenting opposition of the gun lobby, gun manufacturers, so many politicians when they oppose common sense gun legislation. I used to be a law, when I was no longer the vice president, I became a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Before that, I taught a constitutional law class, and so I taught the Second Amendment. There's never been a time that says you can own anything you want. Never. You couldn't own a cannon during the Civil War. No, I'm serious. Think about it. How much?
There's never been a time when you could own anything you want. What about, like, immediately after they adopted the Constitution? What about then? You could probably own anything you wanted then, right? Was there anything prohibited? Am I missing something? Right? All there was the musket. That's what we've been told over and over and over again, right? All there was the musket, and everybody had one, or almost everybody had one. I guess there were some cannons, too. People had those.
You hear this phrase, the blood of liberty. Wash of those. Give me a break.
What a bunch of clapping seal idiots. Holy smokes. You guys don't even know, maybe they're laughing at him and not with him. I don't know. I don't think so. I think it was a receptive audience. I think they love Joe Biden there and they want him, you know, to be okay. But the blood of liberty, I mean, really? And they all laugh as if they know the joke. What is the joke there? Are you saying that the old phrase is comical, that the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots, right? That phrase has a meaning. I don't find that to be a comical meaning. It's a warning. And what that means is that even the quote good guys, the patriots, they die, right? The tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots. In other words, people have to fight for liberty, because this gets back to what the founders recognized and spoke of often, which is that the natural tendency of government is to take liberty from the people, and the natural tendency of the people is to yield that liberty to the government. And they recognize this. George Washington talked about government, like fire, is a useful servant but a fearful master. What does that mean? It means governments go tyrannical. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? These axioms came into being for a reason. People didn't just make these things up just because they sounded good, right? These were animating philosophies around the American Revolution, around all revolutions, around all societies, about the nature of humans, right? To put their fellow humans in bondage and slavery, to take advantage of other people, to take their liberty in exchange for, quote, security, or in exchange for nothing, just because they have the power to do so. And that's what made the American experiment so unique. Said, no, we can govern ourselves. We will do this ourselves. We don't need a king. We don't need a government to rule over us. We can govern ourselves. And hopefully we're good enough people to do so. That's the experiment. Now, maybe you want to say that experiment has failed. And so I guess we're going to need, you know, a tyrannical government. Oh, whoa, there you go. There's that thing again. See, when you don't believe that the experiment is working, that phrase about the Tree of Liberty becomes even more important. I believe this is David Strom at David Strom at hotair.com. Joe Biden has revealed a nasty habit of threatening gun owners with F-15s. He does this often, repeatedly. For years, he has said this stupid line. It's the stupidest thing, too. Now, Strom says, I don't think Biden has any plans to send fighters or bombers to strafe and level America's exurbs. Suburbs, isn't it? You know, suburban areas. Anyway, he sure does, though, like to talk about the prospect. Whenever he gets to talking about gun control, he inevitably wanders off into a fantasy land where he can order America's pilots to take out a MAGA fan or 10,000. It's a bad look. Not that his supporters see it that way. No, no. They love this talk. They cheered it. Yeah, they love this idea of, you know, them getting control of the Supreme Court, because they can't do it legislatively. So they're going to get control of the Supreme Court, and they're going to ban all the guns, and then they're going to have a bunch of, I guess, government officials with guns kicking doors down and not at all encountering resistance or something. But if they do encounter resistance, then you call in the air support and you just bomb the bejeebus out of the property. And you just murder everybody like Ruby Ridge style, right? They love this idea. This is why I never believe them when they talk about, you know, we want to get rid of gun violence, and you do that by taking all the guns. Because in order to take all the guns, you're going to have to go through a lot of gun violence first. I mean, a lot. I mean, tons of it. Do you know who owns the guns? Have you done a demographic profile of your typical gun owner? They have a couple. They have a few. And they are not on your political team, generally speaking. Joe Biden really loves the idea of mowing people down with some F-16s. Oh, Americans. Well, MAGA Americans. David Strom at hotair.com points out, Republicans and conservatives are quite literally the most heavily armed people in the world, owning more guns than all the armies in the world combined. There are more guns than people in the United States. With 393 million guns owned by the American public, more often than not in the hands of conservatives, you would know it if the MAGA movement were looking to violently overthrow the government. That's one of the reasons, he says, I shake my head at the insurrection narrative. It's absurd. If the protesters wanted to take over the government, they would not have come with signs or worn Viking helmets. They would have been packing. And they weren't. Joe Biden delivers this address in front of the Everytown USA annual conference. They call it the Gun Safety University. And he makes this same point that he has made repeatedly over the course of his career whenever he's talking about gun control. Like, oh, they say they got guns to prevent a tyranny. They're going to need to F-16s.
No, I mean it. Seriously.
Seriously. Yeah.
And by the way, if they want to think to take on government, if we get out of line, which they're talking again about, well, guess what? They need F-15s. They don't need...
Yeah. It's such a stupid thing. By the way, he also had the quote there where he talked about the blood of tyrants. Well, he called it the blood of liberty or something. He messed up the quote. Yeah, it's the blood of patriots and tyrants. Thank you, Kirk. It's the tree of liberty must be watered with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Right? Both. Right? it's not a good scenario. Like that, you don't, right? You don't want that to be occurring in your lifetime because there's going to be a lot of people dead. It's not optimal, so to speak. By the way, that's a quote attributed to Thomas Jefferson. Well, he was writing it in a letter. I think it was to John Adams' kid or stepson or something, or son-in-law. I forget. What makes this speech most ironic is that the president's own son, who you'll recall, the president said Hunter Biden did nothing wrong. And then just a couple hours after Hunter Biden was convicted of doing something wrong as it relates to purchasing illegally a gun, Joe Biden then goes and speaks to a crowd that wants more gun control laws on the books and supports the very law that Hunter Biden was just convicted under. By the way, the reaction to the conviction, not great from a lot of the media, not great. They viewed this as a tragedy. In fact, here's a montage Fox News put together.
Not a surprise, and yet there is something unbelievably tragic about the entirety trajectory of this case.
But so that's the sad part, is that he went to trial. It would have been a miracle if there was an acquittal. It would have been the jury doing nullification, saying we're sympathetic to him, which you're not supposed to do as a jury, but some jurors do that. So it is not an unfair verdict. They followed the law, but it's a sad verdict.
All of the major implications of the first conviction of the child of a president, this trial inside the courtroom, like virtually every criminal trial, was a personal story, a personal tragedy, a family tragedy.
This is a tragedy for the Biden family, precipitated in large measure by the death of Bo Biden. For 8 years, the Attorney General of Delaware. Not the favored son, but the more prominent of the two sons.
Not only did we have history with the first ever criminal conviction of a sitting president's son, we had played out for the world here an ugly family story of addiction and what it does to families, even close-knit families. The tragedy that impacted Hunter Biden that led to this criminal case and this criminal conviction is a type of tragedy shared by so many Americans.
Right. So just a lot of sympathy. A lot of just this outpouring of sympathy from Democrats and media, but I repeat myself, for the family and for Hunter Biden. It's just such a tragedy. As if he had no agency, right? Hunter Biden was found guilty of making a false statement in the purchase of a gun, making a false statement related to information required to be kept by a federally licensed gun dealer, and found guilty of possession of a gun by a person who is an unlawful user of or addicted to a controlled substance. Here is what the U.S. attorney, Weiss, said in his brief statement after the verdict.
No one in this country is above the law. Everyone must be accountable for their actions, even this defendant. However, Hunter Biden should be no more accountable than any other citizen convicted of this same conduct.
Like what?
The prosecution has been and will continue to be committed to this principle and to the principles of federal prosecution in carrying out its responsibility.
Okay, and the last part. Okay, yeah, we're going to do our job. Okay, good. Well, you should do your job. But listen to what he's saying here.
No one in this country is above the law.
Right.
Everyone must be accountable for their actions,
okay,
even this defendant.
Okay.
However, Hunter Biden should be no more accountable than any other citizen convicted of this same conduct.
Does that apply to Donald Trump up in New York? Is that the same standard? So think about what he's saying there. Is that Hunter Biden should not be more accountable? In other words, go light on him. Go easy on him in the sentencing. We kind of had to do this, yes, but, you know, we're not monsters here. Probably just, you know, slap on the wrist would suffice. I think he's learned his lesson, everybody, right? Maybe not even a slap on the wrist. Maybe no probation. Maybe just a monthly pee test. How about that? I don't think I've ever heard a prosecutor after a win, because that's what this was for them, after a win, I don't think I've ever heard a prosecutor say, you know, hey, let's not hold them more accountable than everybody else does, anybody else would with a similar charge. And I guess there's where the analogy that I just offered up with Donald Trump breaks down, because nobody ever actually has been charged like Donald Trump was in that case. So I guess that, yeah. President Biden released a statement expressing love and support for his son, said, I am the president. I am also a dad. Jill and I love our son, and we are so proud of the man he is today. So many families who have had loved ones battle addiction understand the feeling of pride seeing somebody you love come out on the other side and be so strong and resilient in recovery. As I also said last week, I will accept the outcome in this case and will continue to respect the judicial process as Hunter considers an appeal. I wonder what the grounds for appeal would be on that. Yeah. Washington Post reporting, this is, I'm not going to play the audio because it's just horrible, because it was aboard Air Force One, I guess. The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre does not rule out a possible commutation of Hunter Biden's sentence. See, it's not a pardon. It's a commutation. See, there you go. When Biden said he wouldn't pardon, it's a commutation of the sentence. See, it's totally different. One wipes it away and the other just means you don't have to pay the penalty. Don't, yeah. I mentioned earlier the case of Donald Trump. Timothy Carney had a good write-up at the Washington Examiner. The case against Trump eventually boiled down to weaponized election denial. New York's prosecutors and their defenders in the media ultimately argued that Trump's 2016 win was illegitimate, and this illegitimate win was election fraud, which formed the underlying offense that elevated an accounting misdemeanor into a felony. All right, I'm going to walk through this again. It's sort of daisy-chained logic here, okay? The prosecutors argue that Trump's 2016 win was illegitimate, and the illegitimacy of the win was election fraud. That's the underlying offense which raised it from a misdemeanor to a felony. The true underlying offense was that Trump cheated on his wife, but Democrats in the news media announced decades ago that such matters were none of our business, right? Now, Carney says they were wrong. Trump's infidelities, like Bill Clinton's and JFK's, reflect on his unfitness for the office, but these are the new rules. The actual crime Trump was found to commit, in essence, was lying to his own checkbook, right? When Trump's company reimbursed Trump's crooked lawyer, Michael Cohen, for his hush money payments to Stormy Daniels, the company wrote it down as compensation for legal services. To make such a picayune, victimless crime into a felony, they needed to posit that this misleading accounting entry was in service of another more serious underlying crime. So let's go to liberal ethics lawyer Norm Eisen to explain. Quote, a prison sentence would send a message to Mr. Trump and his followers that you cannot get away with conspiracies to interfere with an election. Conspiracies to interfere with an election. Okay, if my memory serves correctly, 2016, Trump was one of the candidates in the election, right? I do recall that. He wasn't interfering in the election, unless you believe the election was Hillary Clinton's and Trump was just an interloper. And that's exactly the mindset here of Norm Eisen and every other defender of the verdict. The prosecutor in the case, Joshua Steinglass, believed the election was illegitimate because the voters lacked this one piece of information about Donald Trump. He said in his closing argument, quote, democracy gives people the right to elect their leaders, but that rests on the premise that the voters have access to accurate information about the candidates, which is kind of an insane argument with absurd implications, he says. Tim Carney says. Eisen and many liberals endorse it, though. If it is election fraud, they are saying, to keep some information out of public knowledge during a presidential campaign. Was it election fraud when Obama pretended in 2008 that he didn't really support gay marriage? Right? Is that election interference? Would be. Was it election fraud when Bill Clinton did not disclose his serial philandering? emphasizing the conspiracy, quote unquote, to keep information secret, doesn't limit anything here. Every single presidential campaign is a conspiracy of the candidate, the running mate, the spouses, the campaign manager, and the whole inner circle of the campaign. More to the point, did NPR and Facebook and Twitter, did they engage in fraudulent election interference when they tried to hide the damaging Hunter Biden laptop right before the election, right? Logic would say yes, that's the same standard. There's a huge swath of the academic, political, and media establishment that has never accepted Hillary Clinton's loss, their loss, in 2016. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.